The Moment That Changed My Life by Rosalind Kavanagh. Threepenny Bit. I became aware of the significance of the missing letter H as soon as I started school aged 5 in a small coastal town in the south of England. It was 1962. In the evenings after our meal, I would sit on my mum's knee at the small formica table and play the game I'd invented. Say what I say. "It's thruppence, mum. That's how everyone else here says it." "Trappence," my mother laughed at herself in her soft Tipperary accent. "Put your tongue between your teeth, mum," I encouraged. "It's thruppence." When it was my turn to copy mum, I would stumble over strange Gaelic phrases she remembered. "Doon de bail," "shut your mouth." Dad, also from Tipperary, wasn't much better at mastering the TH. He looked like Paul Newman, it was said. Black hair, chiselled face and searching blue eyes. I was born in Belfast in 1957, at the height of Dad's troubles, when he was working in a huge aircraft factory in the city. Dressed in his supervisor's coat, white shirt and black tie, he would stand with his clipboard beside a big turbo engine plane. Dad was responsible for quality control, signing off repaired engines as being safe. "Do it again," he would instruct one of the blue boiler-suited men. "That measurement should be 3,000, not 2. "You can't see the wood for the trees," one of the men invariably quipped. "Do it again," said Dad. "I'll be back to check it." He would turn his back to ripples of laughter. Even that white supervisor's coat couldn't protect him from the mockery of the aircraftsman. When Dad's mental health began to decline, and my mother could no longer tolerate the bricks through the window, a transfer request was signed by the doctor. We crossed the sea to England, my six-month-old self oblivious to the rough seas and the puking breaths of my 3 elder siblings. But the troubles had spread to England, and terrorist bomb blasts punctuated my childhood. Dad said little about his new job at an aircraft yard, but it involved him inspecting helicopters with dentist-like mirrors for tiny cracks the apprentices might have missed. His strained expression when he came home from work was constant. He muttered about the Egits who couldn't understand him. I wondered why I could perfectly understand my parents' broad Irish accents, but had to translate what they were saying to my friends. From the moment I realised my parents would never master the TH, my campaign to fit in evolved. I got a part-time job in the local library to fund after-school speech and elocution classes with Mrs. Blake. She was an eccentric old lady with straggly grey hair who lived in a large decaying house on the posh side of town. The other pupils, mostly girls, arrived in their school uniforms of straw boater hats and grey badge blazers. I would rush home from the local comprehensive school to change out of my second-hand uniform before catching the bus for my lesson. One of these girls would usually open the door before joining the others in a tight-ringed circle. I began to realise how Dad must have felt at work and was relieved that my drama teacher had wobbly shelves of dusty classics for me to peruse whilst I waited for my class to start. Mrs. Blake would often give me extra lessons for free. I was trained to walk across her airy wooden-floored studio with heavy books poised delicately on my head. Sometimes she would have me lie on the floor and do deep breathing exercises. When I had to wear a tooth brace for months, The troublesome sibilant S sound was soon dealt with. Mrs. Blake entered me for elocution exams and local drama competitions. My favourite performance was Eliza Doolittle from Pygmalion. "What's that you're rehearsing?" quizzed my mum when she heard me practising in the kitchen. "The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain," I trilled in my best received pronunciation British accent. "It's about a young girl," I hesitated, "who has to adapt how she talks to get on, Mum." Mum nodded and took an interim puff on her cigarette as she rolled out the pastry for the apple pie. When the evening came for my first drama festival, Dad offered to drive me in his bright green Ford Cortina. He wasn't familiar with the location and we drove around dimly lit streets while I checked my watch and Dad cursed the lack of directions. When we eventually arrived at the hall, I strode up to the adjudicator's table in front of the stage, ignoring the hushed silence of the audience. The judge turned to me in her elegant blue suit, hair in a perfect bun, and glanced at her watch. "Just time for one more," she gestured to the steps at the bottom of the stage. Mum placed my trophy in the centre of the living room mantelpiece the next day and cut out the front page article in the local newspaper. "Lost Rosaline shows the way." When I finished my degree in English and Drama at university, my parents missed the award ceremony. Mum wasn't a driver and her map reading had never been strong. They arrived in time for the garden party afterwards, though. Dad insisted on hiring the official photographer. Kodak Instamatics were not good enough for the first graduate in the family. Trying not to teeter in my borrowed black stiletto shoes, I smiled in my buttoned-up blue blouse and black pencil skirt, whilst the crimpling-suited photographer snapped away. "Here you are," said Dad, counting out the pound notes and coins when it was time to pay. "What's this?" asked the man, holding up one of the coins, eyeing it suspiciously. "It's truppence," smiled Dad. The photographer raised his eyebrows and looked at me. "Dad, where did that come from?" I laughed, taking out my purse. "Threepenny bits went out of circulation in 1971."